This is episode 5 of the Foreign Language Mastery Podcast. I'm your host, John Fotheringham. In today's show, I interview Randy the Yearlyglot from yearlyglot.com. To read a transcript of this episode and to find other tips, tools, and tech for mastering any foreign language, go to languagemastery.com. Here is the phone interview, originally recorded June 6th, 2010.
So maybe we could start out, just tell me a little bit more about how you got started in language learning and what languages you've learned so far, and then I'm going to ask a little bit more about your Yearlyglot project.
All right. Well, I guess I should have prepared a little bit so that I would have some canned answers, but all right.
I like the uncanned answers better. Deal.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I guess my whole life I've just always sort of been interested in language just in general. I don't really have a good explanation for why. I started, I guess you might say it all the way back in kindergarten. My kindergarten teacher actually taught us Spanish words at the end of every day, one new Spanish word. So that might actually be the thing that got me going in this direction. But by middle school, I was taking Spanish classes, and then in high school, I was taking German classes and French classes. I actually had one of my best friends in high school was a Filipino guy who had some trouble with the English language because he and his family had just moved here. He and I took up a pretty close friendship just on the principle that he asked for some help on the first day and I gave it to him. So in addition to everything else, he taught me a lot of Filipino Tagalog. And, I just sort of picked up on everything every time it was put in front of me. I would have never taken the German and French classes except for the school didn't offer anything past Spanish too. So.
Right.
You know, it was weird. I just wanted to keep doing language, and I'd run out of Spanish, so I switched to German. And then I met this Filipino guy and then learned some French. And before you know it, I'm like, wow, it's not so hard. I want to learn every language.
Right. It is addictive, that's for sure. So the whole Yearlyglot idea of learning any language in 1 year or less, is that something you developed more recently, or is that something you've kind of always gone towards?
That actually is a very recent development. It comes on the back of learning Russian pretty much fluently in 1 year after everybody told me it would take 6, 7, 8 years of study.
Right.
And, you know, I still don't claim to be an expert, but I put in some time and did the work. And after 1 year, I'm pretty fluent in Russian for a guy who's only been learning for a year. And so I figured, you know, everybody says that's one of the hardest languages. If I can do it with that, I should be able to do it with anything. And I don't see why anybody else couldn't do it, you know, especially with an easier language. Something like a Romance language that's so close to English anyway. There's no reason you shouldn't be able to learn that in a year. Benny proves that you can do that a lot of times in 3 months.
Yeah, I often say, I think if you do things right, there's no reason you can't at least get to a modicum of fluency in 6 months. I mean, I think that's a good realistic target. I think 6 years is ridiculous, but that gets to the issue, which is if you do it the old academic sit in a classroom way, it will take 6 years.
Right.
And so maybe that's the next question I have for you is how exactly do you go about learning a language that you can do it in under a year?
Yeah, I never really formalized a learning method until I started writing the blog, and now I'm starting to get it really in front of me and see that, oh, if I move this over here, it would work better and that sort of thing. So actually, I'm starting to see a lot of the logic behind some of the more commercial products, like, you know, you think of a Rosetta Stone or something like that, and all of us in the community kind of ridicule Rosetta Stone, but there are some things they do right.
Yeah.
And I think particularly the order in which, you know, you go about things, you start off with some really basic stuff and then you just build on that. I think if you see returns quickly, you get encouraged. And I guess that's my biggest thing is if you can get encouraged, you will keep doing it. So I try to do things that, you know, if I can learn how to say where is, and then I can learn how to say thank you, and then I can learn how to say excuse me, I can immediately turn those three things into excuse me, where is, whatever, thank you. And now I've actually had sort of a small conversation at the cost of just learning three things.
Right.
So I, I think that that's really what I try to do. I try to find the minimum amount of learning that you can get the maximum usage out of and actually turn it into practical, you know, example sentences and those kind of things. And that way, you know, like I said, if you get really encouraged by what you're learning, you'll feel more momentum and you'll keep going.
How do you feel about the whole input versus output debate? I mean, full disclosure, I'm definitely of the input camp.
Okay.
Though I've lived abroad for most of the last decade. And so it's not practical for those that are going to be, you know, moving to Japan tomorrow to spend 6 months on you know, listening and reading input.
Well, and by the same token, it's also not practical for those who are not going to move to expect to do a lot of output either. I think that the input versus output debate is mostly it feels to me mostly like a constructed disagreement, sort of manufactured for the sake of ratings or, you know, clicks or whatever anyway, because really you need both. You know, it might serve you better to have more output if you're in person, and it might serve you better to have more input if you're studying at home. But at the end, if you don't do both, you're not going to learn. So I think that the debate itself is kind of silly, and it's entertaining, but it lost its entertainment value a long time ago for me.
You know, I have my own opinions, but I really want to just share, you know, the opinions of others that, you know, what's worked for them. Because obviously everyone's different, and what has worked for me won't necessarily work for everybody. Though I do think 90% of the things probably work for everybody. And it's that extra 10% that is different. And that's why you need to present a variety of methods.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like the Pareto principle of 80-20.
Exactly.
Everybody can benefit from that 80.
I think we've read the same books. So back to then, you know, what's worked for you. So you build on the basics, which makes sense. What other do's and don'ts can you share?
Oh, wow.
I know there's a lot.
You know, my biggest don't... I love to ramble on and on about don'ts. Maybe it's a little too negative, but...
Well, that's the first post I put on my language blog was the top 10 not-to-do list items in a language.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the my biggest don't is don't put too much pressure on yourself. You know, people worry about how far back they are in the book or how many chapters they've done or how many words they know, and it becomes so stressful that you're actually you lower the quality of your learning for the sake of getting more quantity. And that's the biggest don't. It's easy to overstress yourself. It's all about staying positive, and anybody who has a positive attitude can succeed. You know, I look at people. Here in Chicago, it's very diverse. It's a very, like, a world community. And I'm every day surrounded by people speaking hundreds of different languages. And what's interesting to me is that when they speak to me, they don't speak correctly or properly, but they're not afraid to do it.
Right.
You know, and I think about people I know who are like, oh, I'm trying to learn Spanish or I'm trying to learn this. And you never hear them actually do it. They never try. They just say they're trying. But, you know, I'm on the bus with somebody who's asking me for directions, and they're butchering English, but they're not afraid to do it.
Right.
You know? That's so important.
Yep. No, the fear of the pain of doing something, I mean, that, I think, turns so many people off of whether it's a language, whether it's getting in shape. I mean, it's all the same. It's usually the fear of the task is worse than the actual task itself.
Yeah, absolutely. The anticipation and the, it's going to be so much work.
Right.
But I was watching an interview with Will Smith recently, and he was talking about how his dad had a shop and broke down the brick wall and then asked his sons to rebuild the brick wall. And the kids both said, it's impossible. That would take forever. And his dad said, I don't care how you do. You know, don't think about building the whole wall. Just lay one brick. And just make sure every time that you lay that brick perfectly, you don't care about anything else. Mm-hmm. And day by day and you know, brick by brick, after several weeks or months, or he didn't really say how long, but they had rebuilt the brick wall of the shop. And, you know, that's so motivational, you know, when you think of doing things, you know, don't think of how far you have to go or how long or hard the journey is. You just think about doing each step the best you can.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you look back and you're surprised at how much you've done and how easy it's become.
Right. No, that's a really good metaphor. I like that.
Right. Yeah, and especially with languages, because there is a lot of work. We'd be fooling ourselves to say, oh yeah, anybody can do it in a week or 2 weeks.
Right.
But you know, there is a lot. But you can do those things that keep you motivated, and then you can look back and say, holy cow, that whole journey was fun, and it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. I really like the metaphor you drew to working out. That particularly for me has always been one of my favorite analogies for pretty much anything difficult in life, because you know, I go to the gym every morning. I'm a weight trainer in the morning before work, and every day I go in there and I have to push up a weight, and I have a goal in mind. You know, every time I go, I try to push 5 more pounds than the last time. Now, I don't always succeed at doing that, but week by week, I am pushing more weight every time than I was the week before. And, you know, you look at that long-term goal of, you know, I want to bench press 250 pounds, or I want to squat 400 pounds, and you think, oh my gosh, that's so far off and impossible. But each week, you know, you look back and say, wow, I remember when I could only do 160. And over time, you know, you watch yourself change and you watch your strength grow. And what it does more than anything else, in my opinion, is it makes your mind strong. And when your mind is strong, you believe you can do anything. And once your mind is strong, there's nothing that can stop you. You know, it might be days or weeks or months, but there is no task you won't attack. And that's the attitude I like to have.
Time plus effort.
Absolutely.
Well, in addition to language, my other main interest is martial arts. And I always like to share with people that the word kung fu, or, you know, kung fu, it actually means skill through effort, or skill through
nice.
Time. And that's such a good analogy to language. It's just doing it day in, day out, and eventually you'll get better. You can't not get better. Well, and the reason so many people fail, I think, is because they're just not doing it ultimately. Sitting in a classroom is not doing it. You know, or even watching a movie. I mean, you know, you put in a foreign language movie, that's not necessarily doing it unless you're actively doing it.
Right. Well, and classroom, that's another really great topic for me to go on and on about. Because, you know, I think that, like I was saying about the weight training and stuff, you know, with your mind being strong. And when you talk about signing up for a class, like, that's always really the cop-out, I think. You know, you want to do something, or you say you want to do something, so you sign up for the class, and that becomes like the token effort of saying, hey, I tried. But the lessons are always so far apart and so short, and even worse, they're retarded by the fact that you have to teach a whole group, not just one person.
Right.
You know, you really aren't – you're not even putting in a fraction of the effort you would do spending that same time on your own with a book once a week. And but the worst thing about a classroom is that if you don't do it, you can blame the teacher. Oh, well, I tried, but the teacher was no good.
Yep.
You know, or the class was no good, or it was too far away, or it was too expensive, or whatever. But, you know, you don't take any responsibility when you sign up for a class the way that you would if you just grab a book and just start reading it, or grab a CD and start listening to it.
Okay. Any other tips you'd like to add, or any don'ts?
Well, there was one thing that sparked something in my mind that you said a moment ago too, is about how a lot of people aren't trying, and how it's, you know, it's a lot of work. And it reminded me of something else that, you know, recently I just really started thinking about. This is that everything is work. You know, any skill, anything that you do well is the product of hours and hours and hours of practice and work. And, you know, some people may have a talent and whatever. You can't teach talent, but nobody becomes successful on talent alone. You have to have the skill. When it comes to anything in life, but languages is a great example of this, it really feels to me like people give up too early. Mm-hmm. And even at the easiest phase, you know, all you have to do is just crack that book, or talk to that tutor, or, you know, put on that CD, or whatever it is that you do to study. You know, instead of turning on the TV. And it's so easy, effortless to keep doing, you know, like once you do something and it's a habit, it's effortless to keep doing that. It's actually more work for you to stop and go turn on the TV and ignore your language time. So, you know, sometimes I find it astounding that people actually give up, You know, because that means you're making a choice to quit. just like my gym metaphor again. You know, if I get sick and I don't want to go to the gym because I'm, you know, not feeling well or something, I automatically like start to miss it. And after a day or two, I'm like, I want to go in earlier and try to make up for all that time.
Right.
You know, and there, I mean, there is a point, like if you miss a lot of time, like a few weeks or something, there is a point where that habit starts to fall off, and then you have to do the work of rebuilding it.
Sure.
And the same thing is with everything, certainly with languages. I just think that overall, like if unless there's like a death in the family or something, there is no thing that can stop me from spending an hour a day learning something about languages or whatever, because that's what I, you know, it's what I want. How could I stop? I would have to make a conscious decision to actually stop.
Well, that leads to another, I think, important point is it does take time. It does take consistency. But I also think that people overestimate how many hours a day it will take. You know, they're so used to the idea of sitting in a classroom for 2 or 3 hours. You know, and realistically, I don't usually study for more than 15 or 30 minutes at a time, and I just try to do that 2 or 3 times a day, every day.
Right.
And that's much, much more powerful than, you know, doing 4 hours a week, but all at once.
Yeah, yeah. If you overburden your mind, it starts to fight back against you. But, yeah, I do the same thing. I wake up in the morning and I browse a vocabulary list or look at something or just read a blog entry or something for 15 minutes. And then I head off to the gym, go to work. On the ride home from work, you know, I spend 15, 30 minutes, however long it is, depending on the traffic that day. Look at some phrase lists or whatever whatever I'm doing that particular day. And then once at night. So, yeah, probably about the same as you, 3 times a day for maybe 15 to 30 minutes.
No, and I, as you said, you know, listening on the way to the workout or on the way home, it's just making that a habit. You know, it's, okay, I'm going to do the dishes, pop in the iPod. I'm, you know, in line at the store, okay, put in the iPod. Every chance that you're not doing something that, you know, requires your 100% attention, that can become another learning opportunity. It doesn't have to be, you know, sitting down at a desk.
And I would even go so far as to say that, like, a lot of times when people like us use that analogy, you know, we say 5 minutes at the supermarket line or 15 minutes on the train. I think that listeners or readers sometimes get the impression that we're saying you should do that every time. And really, that's not the case. Like, all you need to do is just make use of one of those times over the course of your day, and you're already doing something. You know, I don't spend every 5 minute line wait reading something about languages, and I don't spend every cab ride or every train ride trying to study vocabulary. I just do sometimes,
right?
But it's enough times.
Yeah,
no, you know,
that's a good point, and that goes back to the fear of doing it often prevents people from starting.
It can sound really scary when you hear people talk about it, or, you know, you read some of these language hacking tips, and, you know, really all of this stuff, we're all trying to help people. You know, that's why we're all here. All of us are trying to help people to see that it's easy.
and
sometimes I think that there's so many tips that people get overwhelmed and they think it's going to be too hard.
Right.
But
I think in its aggregate, though, it gets doing a service. I mean, I think so many people do things so far the wrong way and get so fed up, and they develop this whole foreign language phobia and this belief that, oh, I'm just not good at languages, so I can never learn. I mean, almost everybody I know is that way.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of the norm is I'm not good at languages. And so I think it takes a lot of us, a lot of voices, a lot of echoes for it to hopefully eventually get to, not everybody, but at least those that want to learn, which I just hope that enough of our voices reach them that they can, you know, shake themselves out of this belief they can't do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think most of us probably all have similar stories, you know, about struggling with the first one, or, you know, like my own personal struggle. This is going to sound kind of funny coming from a guy who tells people that it's easy to learn languages, but I actually have such a hard time hearing that sometimes I don't even understand English. And I'm constantly asking people to repeat themselves and, you know, not understanding things that are said. And then you try to translate that into learning a foreign language, and it becomes a real challenge. So, you know, it's one of those things where even though I'm telling you, I'm telling anybody who will listen, I can learn a new language every year. And I'm totally not talking about the challenging part that anybody else who does this is going to have an easier time of it than I am. So, yeah.
Very good. So what is your current language project, and then what is the next one, do you think?
Wow. Well, the current language project is Italian, although it's never just one thing. I'm planning a trip to Lithuania in a few months, so I guess I allow myself the weekends to stray from Italian. So every weekend I'm learning a little bit of Lithuanian in anticipation of this trip, but during the week I stay focused on Italian. But I haven't selected my language for next year, and even if I had, I wouldn't admit it to anyone. But I do know that I'm starting to narrow in on one of maybe three. I'm very, very interested in Turkish. I'm living pretty close to Canada, and I think that if I didn't take advantage of French, that would be foolish.
Right.
And the third one, possibly Arabic. So I'm not really sure. I haven't chosen yet, but I think that right now I'm teetering between those three. I could come out as a surprise and just pick something totally unexpected too. So.
All right. Well, just maybe to wrap up, if there's only one thing you want listeners to hear about language learning, what would it be?
When you show somebody you've spent even the smallest amount of time to learn about them, especially if you're an American, because we have a stigma to overcome in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But if you show people that you have spent even the smallest amount of time taking an interest in their language and their culture, it's so well received that it makes such a big difference on the way that you're perceived and the way that your whole dealings with that person go. I was just recently at a bar watching a hockey game, go Blackhawks. I hope they win a Stanley Cup. And
now you're speaking a foreign language to me.
Yes.
I don't speak hockey. I'm sorry.
That's all right. So a patron who had no place to sit was standing near my table, and I started talking to her, and I had picked up on her Russian accent. So just on a whim, assuming that I'm right, because there are a lot of Polish people in this town too, I said something to her in Russian, and she immediately became my best friend for the rest of the night.
Yep.
Whereas everybody else, I saw half a dozen, maybe a dozen guys come and try to hit on her over the night, and she blew them all off. So it's so interesting the way that just those little language niceties can change the way you're perceived.
And there's motivation for you right there. I mean, if you're struggling to stay motivated in a language, look no further than that. It just opens up so many doors that really cannot be opened any other way. Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Randy.
Absolutely. You have a great day, John.
Thanks so much, Randy.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
For show notes and a transcript of this episode, go to languagemastery.com. And if you've enjoyed the show, please take a minute to rate us in iTunes.